From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The U.S. Attorney's Office announced four face federal indictments for bribery, conspiracy, and falsifying ComEd records. They are members of Speaker Mike Madigan's inner circle, Springfield lobbyist and longtime confidant to Speaker Madigan, Mike McLean. Also, Ann Promajori, the former CEO of ComEd, John Hooker, a ComEd lobbyist, and Jay Doherty, also tied to ComEd and former head of the City Club.
He has to, at the very least, be willing to stand in front of the press and the people and answer every last question to their satisfaction. If the Speaker cannot commit to that level of transparency, then the time has come for him to resign as Speaker.
So this is a time for the Democrats to stand up and say enough's enough. This indictment today furthers the corrupt practices that we've seen over Mike Madigan over the past years.
It's time to start having the next conversation about who could get the key votes and who could be our next Speaker.
That's a House Democrat, Will Guzzardi. We also heard from House Republican leader Jim Durkin and Governor J.B. Pritzker. We did not hear from Speaker Michael Madigan, who is losing support by the day as a federal investigation circles around him. Madigan has not been charged. He denies he's done anything wrong. But could this be what takes down the longest-serving legislative leader in the country? We'll discuss that and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, we have Hannah Meisel, a reporter who's covering state government and politics for NPR Illinois. And joining us once more, we have Doug Finke, State Journal Register's Capitol reporter. And Doug, it's good to have you on once again.
Glad to be here, Sean.
So, Hannah, I'm going to start with you. More news on this federal investigation, indictments coming down this week. Get us caught up on what took place this week.
Right. So we've known the broad outlines of what the feds have determined happened in the case of the relationship between Commonwealth Edison and its lobbying practices that were supposed to, you know, intended to influence Speaker Madigan. And we've known that since mid-July when the feds dropped what's called a deferred prosecution agreement against ComEd. And then since then, we've learned a little bit more, but definitely this week when the feds dropped the indictments against those four, you know, in Madigan's inner circle Wednesday evening, we know a lot more, or we at least know, you know, have a bigger idea of the details because we have more transcripts, more of what was actually said. And a lot of what was said was from Mike McLean, who is a confidant to Speaker Madigan, served with him in the Illinois House in the 70s. And then McLean went on to be a lobbyist for ComEd for decades and retired several years ago, but not didn't actually retire, as it turns out. He was kept on as a kind of consultant. He kind of orchestrated this, you know, what the feds are calling a bribery scheme, or, you know, that dates back to at least 2011. It involves jobs and contracts for Madigan allies, jobs where folks didn't really have to do very much work at all. And so the 9-count indictment against McLean, and then two ComEd lobbyists, and Jay Doherty, and then the Exelon CEO, Ann Promajori, and of course, Exelon is the parent company of ComEd. And then earlier in September, I think, honestly, I feel like this has gotten a little bit lost, but the ex-vice president of ComEd, Fidel Marquez, he pleaded guilty to this scheme. Like, we know that people are pleading guilty, they're cooperating, of course. The four of them who were indicted this week, they maintain their innocence. And then we had the speaker come out yesterday morning with a very defiant statement. He repeated a lot of what he said in a September letter when he refused to go in front of this special investigative committee that was initiated by House Republicans to look into, you know, was there any undue influence when it came to public policy, you know, especially when it came to ComEd initiated policy in 2011 and 2016. Anyway, so the speaker's, you know, his statement was, again, very defiant. It doesn't seem like he's gonna go down without a final fight. You know, he said he was offended by the insinuation that he could be bought and influenced. You know, one of the lines kind of I read as a subtle, like throwing them under the bus, saying that he, knowing that the four involved, you know, I doubt that I could be influenced, something like that. And yeah, so, but since then, I mean, since July, we've seen members of Madigan's own caucus come out and say that they would not vote for the speaker, who is the longest serving House Speaker in the nation, for a 19th term. But, you know, since the bombshell indictments dropped Wednesday evening, we've kind of crossed over this threshold where more House Democrats have come out and said that they'd vote against Madigan, and it's kind of an insurmountable number of folks at this point. So it's going to be an interesting 2 months until that vote in January.
Yeah, and just before these folks, and of course the latest news that happened and these latest folks coming out saying they wouldn't support Madigan, Doug, we heard from some unions, labor unions, saying that they still stood behind the speaker. I think he's been around so long, we have seen some ups and downs for Michael Madigan through the years, but he's always survived. Does he have a chance to salvage this situation?
It's really looking doubtful at this point. I mean, you never want to count out somebody like Madigan, who has recovered from some seemingly dire situations in the past. But as we stand now, as we're recording this, there are 18 House Democrats who have said that they will not vote for the speaker. They're expected, again, as we sit here now, they have 73 seats when the new lawmakers are seated in January. So that leaves the speaker considerably short of what he would need to get reelected. Yeah, he can go around and try to convince people, you know, maybe give me one more term. I'll step down after that. But let me lead the chamber as we go through the remap, you know, during the next 2 years. But that is really an awful lot of votes to try to change to get his way. And, you know, frankly, when you make a commitment, a public commitment, as these people have, that I will not support the speaker, to go back on that at this point really destroys their credibility going forward.
Yeah, Charlie, your thoughts on that. Does he have a chance to somehow convince people to change their minds?
I would say probably not. And the reason I say that is, as Doug said, The people who have said I will not vote for him, quite a few of them are from suburbs. The irony is, had Michael Madigan not been drawing the maps and funding their campaigns, they probably wouldn't have been elected in the first place. And so they don't have the same kind of organization that still exists in some of the areas of Chicago, the old time Democratic machine, such as it remains. So they would be probably, if they were to go back on their word now and say, oh, I'll vote for him, they probably would not get another term. So I'm thinking, in my mind, the optimum thing would be for Madigan to announce that I'm going to retire after the end of this current legislative session, which ends in January, and the Democratic caucus will elect a new speaker, and I will at the same time retire from the General Assembly. I will resign the seat from the 22nd Legislative District, and the local Democratic leaders will appoint a replacement. To me, that would be the ideal way of doing it, because if we get into a situation where we start the new session in January and the people are holding out, and there's enough of them that he would need to flip five at this taping, by the time we get to that point, it might be more than five that he would have to flip. And as I say, anybody who has now come out publicly and say, I won't vote for Madigan, if they switch and say, oh, I will vote for him after all, I think they would be signing their death warrant for another term in the legislature. And you don't, I would hope you wouldn't want to get into a kind of protracted fight as occurred many, many years ago when the House went 93 ballots before they elected a speaker. It took more than a week. This was back in 75. And the only player who's still around is actually Madigan. All the other people are long gone. And there were a standoff between two powerful Democrats, Richard J. Daley, the mayor of Chicago, Dan Walker, the governor, and they finally settled on an obscure backbencher from DuPage County named Bill Redmond to be the speaker after 93 ballots.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Doug Finke with the State Journal Register. And Doug, like Charlie was mentioning, from a Democratic perspective, maybe it would be the best thing for Madigan to make this announcement. It would certainly cool things off as far as all of these lawmakers being put on the spot to say, are you going to support him or not? I don't want to say that all these other, I guess it is 55 members of the House Democratic Caucus are loyal to Speaker Madigan or want to support him. They just haven't gone on record yet as of right now to say what they would do. But if Madigan does have that much loyalty, that's going to be hard for anybody to overcome that as well. And like Charlie said, we could see a real protracted fight, something that I'm sure most Democrats don't want right now.
Yeah, I mean, that is the danger going forward. We don't know how many people would want to run for to be the next speaker if Madigan does decide to step aside. You could see the House Democrats break into all sorts of different factions, each with their own preferred candidate. It would take some skillful maneuvering for someone to try to stitch together a coalition to get enough votes. But that, again, is always a danger moving forward. And you have a leadership vacuum like this, filling it could lay open a whole lot of divisions within the caucus that take a long time to heal.
Hannah, the governor this week made it clear that he felt that the speaker should stand up like he does during his daily briefings and take questions from reporters about this and lay out what, at least his point of view about where things are at. It seems as though there's this growing divide there, too, with, the two most powerful Democrats in state government, which is the speaker and the governor. It seems as though Pritzker's trying to distance himself a little bit as well.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I feel like this kind of goes back years to when Pritzker was first running for governor. Republicans wanted to paint him as Madigan's choice. And I don't know if, Madigan called him up and said, hey, you're my guy or whatever. But what I do know is that Madigan is a prolific fundraiser, always has been. But when you have a self-funder, a billionaire who comes along and runs for governor, he has no use for Madigan and his money. And so, for years now, Pritzker has tried to separate himself from Madigan. I remember early on in that campaign, he had some awkward missteps trying to do so, but, ultimately he won the governorship and said he would work with Madigan. And but there has been, growing, there's been separation between the two. And especially since this deferred prosecution agreement was dropped in the summer, the governor has had pressure on him once again to denounce what the speaker, if the speaker has any involvement. And in fact, after Election Day, the governor had a pretty angry tone in his daily COVID press conference when he talked about the failure of his, years-long attempt to get his graduated income tax passed. And he agreed with the senior senator, Dick Durbin, who the night before had said, you know, I do think that this is on Madigan, who, you know, in his capacity as chair of the state party. So at that point, Pritzker agreed and said, yes, there should be new leadership at the state party. So yesterday was the first time that Pritzker said, yes, the speaker should resign from the speakership too if he can't answer satisfactorily to the press and to that special investigating committee. You know, I looked back in my phone yesterday to try to determine the last time that the speaker talked to the press. I guess it was actually back in July when the speaker made an appearance in Springfield to select electoral college electors, I guess, you know, in case that Joe Biden won. And he briefly spoke to reporters then. I wasn't there. But the other time before that was way back on February 4th. And apparently we'd tried chasing him as a press corps several weeks later. But February 4th was that last time that we all spoke to him. And he, I mean, that is who he is. He's a reclusive sort of guy. And the only time that, you know, since I've been around that he's had constant press attention was when he held a lot of press conferences during the budget impasse years, when he basically just said the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I mean, it is significant when the governor says, yeah, he should step down. Because, again, in this Democratic Party, of course, you know, we saw in this most recent election that Madigan is still a prolific fundraiser. He definitely gets that organized labor money like no one else can. But if it taints candidates, if it taints issues, then Pritzker's position and the position of a lot of other Democrats is that we have no use for him anymore.
Charlie, you've covered Madigan longer, certainly, than anybody here probably put together. At the same time, as Hannah mentioned, he's gone a long time now with this, I would almost say, antagonistic attitude toward the press. Was he always that way, though?
No. As a matter of fact, in the years when I was a working reporter, he was very accessible. You could go and sit in his office and talk about not just what the issue of the day is, but political philosophy, history of the Democratic organization. And it wasn't just myself. I mean, other reporters would do that too. And he would routinely, at the end of the session, he'd come to the press room and have a news conference, answer any and all questions dealing with what just occurred. And he was probably as accessible as almost any other leader. Well, maybe not Jim Thompson, because Mike Maggie never came up to the press room and sat in reporters' offices drinking beer with them. But I think what changed is when his daughter, Lisa, first ran for attorney general, and the press was pretty critical of her. And I thought the press was fair in the coverage. Madigan did not. And as a reporter, as I say, I thought the press was fair. But as the father of two daughters, I could see where he was coming from. This is my little girl, and you're treating her this way? And that was the point when in my mind, when he stopped wanting to be as open and as accessible as he had been in the past.
Yeah, Doug,
I think one of the problems for Governor Pritzker is he's got some really big issues that he's got to get done. And I don't see anybody on the horizon in the Democratic caucus who could move forward the kind of tough things that are going to have to occur other than Mike Madigan. Now, somebody might emerge, but I don't see it yet. So as I said earlier, the ideal thing would be for the lame duck session to make the budget cuts, put in the tax increases or the revenue adjustments that are going to be needed to try and put the state back on a sound fiscal track. And then for the speaker to say, and I'm now in April, I'll be 79 years old, so I am now going to retire. I'm not going to be here for what would it be, the 102nd General Assembly. Godspeed to you all.
And Charlie, you made a good point there that the governor does need the help of somebody, whether it's Speaker Madigan or someone else. We're talking about some really difficult budget decisions, maybe cuts, possibly even trying to push a tax increase. And Doug, if he has to work with Madigan, if Madigan survives this and is still the speaker, it does seem as though there's going to be a difficult working relationship there. If it's a new leader, I'm not sure they want to start off with, you know, deep budget cuts and a tax hike on their resume either. What do you think as far as going forward? This does put the governor even more behind the eight ball, it seems.
It does. It depends on who emerges as the new leader. It occurred to me, you know, we have House Majority Leader Greg Harris right now, who has done a whole lot of budget negotiating on behalf of the House Democrats. So if you're talking about trying to resolve the fiscal issues of the state, I think he could readily step in and handle that sort of thing. But you're right. I mean, anyone else, or at least most of the other possible candidates may not want to initially, step into the job and immediately preside over some kind of a tax increase, which is always a tricky device to negotiate, despite the public perception that those things occur about every other hour down at this place.
Yeah. What would be another, I guess, interesting fallout were Madigan actually to depart the scene? What would the state Republican organization do for campaign fodder? They'd actually have to kind of come up with some policy positions other than it's Madigan. It's Madigan. He's a Darth Vader. Vote against Madigan.
Yeah, you know,
that might be welcome.
That's an interesting point, Charlie, because every once in a while you see Republicans speaking up about the fact that they have to be more than the party of the anti-Madigan party, and that's very true. I mean, at some point, whether now or later, Madigan is going to depart from the Illinois House, and they're going to have something in their quiver beyond, animosity toward one person.
Just a couple of minutes left here, and Charlie, not everybody understands how government works behind the scenes, especially in, like we were just talking about, somebody else could come in. Maybe they have the background when it comes to the numbers and understanding the budget, but Madigan had that touch of being able to get people to vote for things maybe they weren't always excited to vote for, protect his members when he needed to, get things passed that benefited the Democratic Party. He was able to work all of that together. That's not something most legislative leaders anywhere really have that type of skill.
No, and I think part of it is that he, more so than any other legislative leader that I've seen, understands the makeup of legislative districts. And so he has a good sense of, and sometimes, at least in my experience, better than the lawmaker, of what is doable in that legislator's district. He also was a master of the fact that you only need 60 votes. And so if he had three or four members for whom a yes vote would be problematic, he'd tell them vote no. And he also had a prodigious fundraising ability. And so if you're in a shaky district, he can come in and help you with technical expertise, with staff, with lots and lots of campaign dollars to fend off any challenge.
And yet at the same time, like you said, only about a minute here, Charlie, but at the same time, we've got a situation where he probably could help a lot of his members out by, again, announcing he would step down, and it hasn't gone to that point yet.
But as I say, I wouldn't be surprised at what it does.
And Doug, going forward, again, just a few seconds left here. Madigan issued that statement this week. We touched on it earlier. I didn't read anything in there that he's anticipating leaving anytime soon on his own, at least.
No, absolutely not. It was I used the word defiant in the story that I wrote that, he is not given any indication of resigning, certainly. And he also made it clear that he believes the charges, this whole bogus, for lack of a better word, and that he's done nothing wrong, and that the things that the allegations of this bribery scheme involve things that are just normal political things you do, try to get jobs for people. And he said it's not his fault if they didn't do any work.
Yeah, just about 20 seconds now. Hannah, your thoughts as well. Do you think we're going to actually see this, some type of change of heart here from the speaker?
I mean, in word, no, but indeed, I think that he could do like a very quiet step away, maybe around New Year's or the holidays. Okay. But, you know, I don't count it. I'm not putting money on it.
All right. Time now for our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you.
Okay. Well, in the, I guess in the category of it's a small world, the defendants, the four Commonwealth Edison honchos, if you will, who were indicted, are going to appear on December 1st for their first arraignment. And they're going to be before federal judge Harry Leinenweber. And this is the same Harry Leinenweber who was a member of the Illinois House from 1973 to 1983. And guess who was Illinois House for the exact same period of time to the day? One, Michael McLean. And of course, Michael Madigan, who was first elected in 1970, was there. And he was in the House leadership for the last 6 years of Leinenweber's tenure.
Hannah?
Well, I'm sure glad that we didn't have a long, drawn-out COVID conversation again, but today, Friday the 20th, is the first day of what the governor's calling Tier 3 mitigations, and it shuts down things like casinos and movie theaters, bowling alleys, things like that. But my real note from the field is that Jim Oberweis, who is a perennial candidate and actually did manage to win the state Senate race back in, I think, 2013. He went for Congress this time and lost by 4,600 votes after all the voting was pretty much said and done, but declared victory anyway prematurely. He went out to a new member orientation in D.C. last week and posted pictures, and boy, was he wrongly mocked online for having done that.
All right, and Doug?
Well, there was a bit of good news with all the doom and gloom with the COVID-19 news that the unemployment rate in Illinois fell to 6.8%. It had been at 10.4%, so that's a pretty significant drop. And currently it's actually lower than the national unemployment rate. That comes with a proviso that we still hear pervasive reports of people who are having difficulty getting the unemployment benefits to which they're entitled. So take that for what it's worth.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week, and our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Doug Finke with the State Journal Register. And before we sign off, I just want to congratulate Doug on a stellar reporting career. Doug has announced he is retiring at the end of the month. Doug, it's been great to work with you all the times you've been on the show and otherwise, and we wish you all the best.
It's been a privilege to be able to do this job and to be on the show, Sean.
And I second that heartily.
And I third it. We love you, Doug.
Well, you can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.